Thank you, James, for getting the doors for us. Good morning. Welcome to GBC. Glad to see everybody here. Glad to see the Woodrows. Thank you all for coming. Okay, so throughout the Gospels, there are several... Excuse me, I've got gum in my mouth. That's not appropriate. Okay, let's... Restart our engines. That was it. Throughout the Gospels, there are several instances that we call Sabbath controversies. They are moments in Jesus' life and ministry in which he or his disciples or both act in such a way as to challenge the many rules and regulations that the Pharisees had placed upon the Sabbath. And last time when we were in Luke's gospel, we looked at Jesus as he confronted their man-made religion and the traditions of men by refusing to participate in their ritualistic fasting and their rote prayers, their ritualistic repetitive prayers. The Pharisees had so twisted the scriptures as to make God's law all about ritual and ceremony and self-righteousness and legalism, and they had stripped it of the importance of faith in God's word. They had even elevated their own teachings to be on par with God's words. They lifted it up as though it were it carried the same authority. So Jesus confronted their religion, comparing it to an old garment and to old wineskins. And then he rebuked them with that common proverb of the day in verse 39, "No one after drinking old wine wishes for new, for he says the old is good enough." You see, he knew that they had been drunk, as it were, for so long on the old wine of their religion that they weren't going to be interested in the gospel and what he had to say. Because their hearts were cold and proud, enslaved by the lure of self-righteousness and blinded by the fury of religious activity, and therefore ultimately at enmity with God, they didn't recognize who Jesus was. Here stood the Son of God before them, the Christ, God with them in human flesh, and yet they didn't recognize him. They didn't know the truth when they read it, and they certainly didn't know the truth when he stood before them. And so their old religion wasn't compatible with the gospel of the kingdom of God. It was actually a hindrance to it. So Jesus was demonstrating there his authority as Christ over the traditions of man's religion, which serve only to enslave the people under the crushing burden of trying to work your way to heaven. Jesus had declared that he has come to proclaim the favorable year of the Lord. And this is a reference, you will remember, to the year of Jubilee, and that is the ultimate Sabbath ordinance found in the Old Testament. There was the Sabbath day, the seventh day of the week, then there was the Sabbath year, which was every seventh year, and then there was the year of Jubilee, which was the seventh set. It was the year after the seventh set of 7 years, so 50 years. That was the year of ultimate restoration, ultimate rest, and release, in which all debts are paid, all slaves are released, all land was returned. It was the ultimate picture of what God would do for his people at the end of the age. The restoration of and the rest from a paradise that was lost. Jesus, by his own declaration, has come to proclaim the favorable year of the Lord. He has come to bring about that paradise regained, if I could steal a title from John Milton. In Luke chapter 6, he continues to demonstrate his authority as Christ, and not just over the traditions of men concerning the Sabbath, but even over the Sabbath itself. He's going to confront their oppressive and apostate religion, and at the same time, he's going to declare himself to be the Lord of the Sabbath. He's the one who has all authority over the Sabbath, and that is a declaration of his deity. He is the God of creation. But before we look at Luke 6, I want us this morning to take some time to lay a foundation of understanding of the Sabbath so we can better understand just how far the Jewish Sabbath had strayed from what Scripture actually taught about it and why Jesus took such deliberate actions to oppose it. If Jesus had come bringing with him the year of Jubilee, which is this greatest Sabbath ordinance of the Old Testament, we need to know what the Sabbath was really meant to be according to God's word. So we're going to define the Sabbath this morning, and then we're going to look at Sabbath and creation, and the Sabbath and Israel, and if we have time, we're going to get to the Sabbath and the Pharisees. And what we're clearly going to see is that the first century Jewish understanding of the Sabbath was far from what God had intended it to be. Now, obviously, there's no way we can be exhaustive in this study, certainly not today. It would take weeks for us to do that, and I don't plan on spending weeks on this, but we are going to have more than one lesson. And I debated on doing half of it here, and then the other half at the end of the month when I teach in worship service, but it's not really fitting in the format I want to do it in, so I think we're gonna split it up. So we're gonna have half the Sabbath study today, then we're gonna deal with Luke chapter 6 verses 1 through 11 in worship at the end of the month, and then next month we'll finish the Sabbath study. So when we deal with Luke 6, 1 through 11, I'll just give you the answers to the study then. And so if you come back for the next study, you'll be able to pass the test really easily because I'm going to have to cheat and give you all the conclusions. So we are going to revisit it today. Now, my goal here is that we're through this study that we're going to receive the benefit of perhaps clearing up some misconceptions that we might have about the Sabbath. And to that, I don't plan on, especially today, spending a whole lot of time talking about modern Christian misunderstanding of the Sabbath, but if time allows, we can certainly discuss that in the end. And like I said, we're going to do things a little differently this morning. I want to try and leave an opportunity at the end for questions and for discussions, but we may not get there because I'm not quite sure. I'm not very skilled at changing the format of my messages into this back-and-forth Bible study. So if we don't get there, my point is, if you have some questions, please raise your hand, and we'll stop, and we'll deal with those as we go through them. I'm going to be asking you some questions. I want some engagement, and we're going to try it out that way today. So don't be shy to raise your question. I may not know the answer, but I'll do my best. And just to be honest, I don't feel like I'm very skilled at doing it this way, so I think this is going to be a hot mess. But, you know, let's go. Yeah, okay. It won't be the first time. I've had a lot of hot messes. So with that, allow me to ask the Lord's blessing on our time. We certainly need it, and then we'll begin. Oh, gracious Father, it is such a wonderful thing that we can come and look into your word. And I ask you this day, Lord, as we do every day, for your help. I ask you to help me be clear, and I pray that you'd help all of us to have open eyes and open ears and open hearts to your truth, and that we would seek to glorify Christ in what we do, and that you would have us be edified through this study. Help us to understand the Sabbath as it is according to your word, and let your word have its perfecting work in our hearts. And we praise you, Father, for your grace and your mercy and for all who you are. And we just ask these things in Christ's name. So, what is the Sabbath? What is the definition of the Sabbath? There are two primary words in the Old Testament for Sabbath, okay? And they're pretty much indistinguishable in the translations. They both say Sabbath, so we can't really tell. But one's a noun and one's a verb. The Hebrew noun for the Sabbath day is Shabbat, and it kind of has, now I don't pronounce Hebrew very well, so bear with me if you do and I'm butchering it, but Shabbat has more of a hard B sound in the center, so that's how we're going to try and delineate the two. So Shabbat is the noun form. It's the name of the seventh day Sabbath. In Judaism, that is the seventh day, right? It began on Friday evening, and it ended on Saturday evening. And so that is the Sabbath day. And how they determined when the evening started was when you could discern three stars in the sky. As soon as you could see three stars, that's when the official start of the Sabbath was. So it's the last day a week in which all secular or non-religious work was to cease. The people of God were to devote themselves to remembering who God is and what he's done, and to study his law and to fellowship. Now in the Bible, it's first mentioned, we find that noun, Shabbat, first mentioned in Exodus 16. And this is during the time of Moses, of course. And we're going to look at that in a moment. But first, let's consider the root to the noun Shabbat, which is the verb Shavat, with sort of a WV sound there in the middle. This word means to cease or to rest from activity. And we first find this in the account of creation in Genesis 2. So that's going to be our starting point. So if you want to turn to Genesis chapter 2, this is where we will begin. In verse 2 of Genesis chapter 2, we read, "By the seventh day, God completed his work with which he had done, and he rested on the seventh day from all his work which he had done. Then God blessed the seventh day and sanctified it, because in it he rested from all his work which God had created and made." So here God Shavat, or rested from his creation work. And again, it's not the noun Shabbat, which signifies the actual day of Sabbath, but it's the noun, it's the verb, and it means to cease from labor. And if you want to keep your finger here and flip over to Genesis 8, this is the next time we see this verb. At the end of the flood, when God makes a promise to never destroy the earth by water again, here at the end of chapter 2, he promises that the end of chapter 8, verse 22, "While the earth remains, seed time and harvest, and cold and heat, and summer and winter, and day and night shall not cease." There's our word, Shavat. It simply means cease. So he promises all these aspects of life on earth will not stop as long as the earth remains. He's not going to destroy the world that way again. So right away, we see clearly that this is what the word means. It means to rest or cease, rest from activity, not rest in the sense of sleeping. So the noun Shabbat is a word that God uses exclusively for the day of the Sabbath. And like I said, it isn't used until Exodus 16, but it's derived from this verb, which means to cease or rest from activity. So before we move on, any questions? Everybody up to speed? Am I clear? No? Comments? No? Okay.
Do you know what happened on a cloudy night? You couldn't see the stars?
I do not know. I do not know. That's just what the Mishnah said about the official start. So I guess they checked their Timex. Maybe that was, I don't know. So let's move on to the Sabbath and creation. Let's go back to Genesis 2 and look at this. Now many have claimed that the Sabbath day is an ordinance that began right here in chapter 2. They call it a creation ordinance. And the thinking is this: since the Sabbath began at creation, it precedes the law of Moses, and therefore it survives the law of Moses. In other words, the Sabbath day is a law for all of mankind to follow, not just the Jews, and it endures today even for Christians. We call these people Sabbatarians or Christian Sabbatarians, and they come in two different flavors. The first one is like the Seventh-day Adventists, who teach that because this is where the Sabbath began, the true Sabbath day of worship, which was created as an ordinance for all of men, is on Saturday, not Sunday. And then the other flavor of Christian Sabbatarians are like the many Puritans and the Reformers and even many in early Christian American Christianity who recognize that the church day of worship is actually on Sunday, because that's what the Old Testament teaches, that our day of worship moved to Sunday. But because they believe this ordinance began in creation, they treat Sunday with the same kinds of rigid prohibitions and regulations as the early Jewish people did the Sabbath day on Saturday. So you can't basically do anything on Sunday except go to church and worship God. You can't go play ball. You can't do anything like that. So I'm sure many of you are familiar with that sort of thing, and perhaps some of you even grew up under that. But is this what the Bible teaches? Was the Sabbath established as a commanded ordinance for all of mankind right here in Genesis chapter 2? That's the question, and I intend to show you that the answer is no. It was not. The concept of a day of rest was established at the end of creation, but there is no evidence in the text here or anywhere in the Old Testament that suggests that God had ordained the Sabbath as an ordinance, a cultic practice, meaning a religious practice, here in Genesis, in creation. He did not ordain that mankind practice the Sabbath here. He doesn't do that until Exodus. And there, it's only for Israel, but we'll get to that soon enough. So, again, let's read verses 2 and 3. It says, "By the seventh day God completed his work, which he had done, and he rested on the seventh day from all his work which he had done. Then God blessed the seventh day and sanctified it, because in it he rested from all his work which God had created and made." So, let me ask a little ancillary question right off the bat, and please feel free to answer. Why did God rest? Was he tired? No. So why did he rest? Anybody?
It's seventh day complete.
Seventh day is complete, right. His work of creation was complete. That's exactly what it says at the last verse of chapter 1. God saw all that he made, and behold, it was very good, and there was evening, and there was morning the sixth day. Thus the heavens and the earth were completed, and all their hosts, meaning everyone that was part of creation. So God rested in the sense that he simply stopped creating, not that he was tired or worn out, anything like that. And let's notice a few things about what the text actually says, four things specifically. First of all, the seventh day is not called Shabbat, okay? Rather, God's action on the day is described using that verb Shavat, which means to cease. So what is the day called here? Anybody? Three times in verses 2 and 3. What is the day called? The seventh day. That's right. In Judaism, all the days of the week, none of them have names. Like we have Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, etc. They have day 1, day 2, day 3, day 4, day 5, day 6, and day 7. That changed only in Exodus 16 when God named the seventh day Shabbat. And therefore, the seventh day has the name Sabbath or Shabbat, but not any other day. So here, the day is clearly still called the seventh day. It's not called Shabbat. And so the second thing we notice is that there is no command here for mankind to treat this day any differently. Man is not mentioned in the context of verses 2 and 3 of this seventh day anywhere. In fact, man's observance of the Sabbath day isn't mentioned anywhere in the entire book of Genesis. That means there's no mention of it in the life of Adam, Enoch, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Joseph. No mention. All his 11 brothers, none of it. In fact, it's not even mentioned anywhere in the book of Job. And you'll remember Job lived hundreds of years before the law was given. And how did God describe Job? He said, there's no one like him on the earth. He's blameless and upright, fearing God and turning away from evil. Don't you think that there would be at least an allusion to Job or his friends who meet him there, observe the Sabbath? In any way, there's not even a single mention of it anywhere. No mention of the Sabbath, not even a hint. Lewis Berry Chafer writes about this. He says, "Job and his friends refer to creation, the flood, and many details of human obligation to God, but not once do they mention the Sabbath." So that's an interesting thing to note. The third thing to notice is who the Sabbath is actually for. Now, set aside your preconceptions on the Sabbath and maybe what you've been taught in the last, and just look at the text as though this is the first time you've read it. You don't know anything about Exodus 16 or 20, about what's to come in relation to the Sabbath. Who is the Sabbath for here? It's for God. The Sabbath is for God. So we ask the question, what about verse 3, where it says, he blessed the seventh day and sanctified it. Doesn't that mean that he established it as an ordinance right here for man to follow? Well, no, it doesn't. It's easy to read that into the text, knowing what's to come later in Exodus 20, but that would be anachronistic. That would be placing it out of order, taking something that we know now and placing it back before it was intended. So, God's work of creation was completed on the sixth day, and so he rested in the sense that he ceased from his labor to create in the sixth day. And then it says he blessed and sanctified it. So that what does that mean? Well, blessed means that God showed his favor upon the day, and to sanctify it means he set it apart, or set it above. He elevated it. He made it holy. Okay? And these two actions, they go together. And so the sense is that God blessed this day by sanctifying it. All 6 days involved the labor of creation, but God showed favor to the seventh day after his labor was finished by resting, thusly setting it apart from the others. He made the seventh day different. He made it special. And why, I ask, do you think he blessed just the seventh day in this way? Why didn't he bless and sanctify the eighth day as well? Or the ninth day? Or there were 6 days of creation. Why didn't he have 6 days of rest to balance that out? Well, Elizabeth kind of touched on it a little bit by mentioning seven represents the fullness or completion. But there's a little more to it than that. It's to teach us something about the order and purpose of creation itself. And let me explain. You see, man was created on what day? Sixth day. That's right. But God adds one more day to the creation account. And why does he do that? Well, it teaches us that man isn't the climax of creation. The seventh day is the climax of creation. This points us forward in our thinking to the last day when the purpose of creation is fulfilled and ultimate rest is experienced by those with God. Harold Dressler writes this. He says, God separated the seventh day. We interpret this in terms of an eschatological proleptic sign, that eschatological meaning end times, proleptic meaning looking forward, as a sign indicating some future rest. Thus, the statement in Genesis 2:3 is to be understood not in terms of blessing the Sabbath according to our understanding of Exodus 20, which is the law. We're not to take that and put it back here. That's not how we understand it, but in terms of the ultimate rest for the people of God. And then he says, he calls it a fitting capstone in the magnificent structure of Genesis 1 to Genesis 2. And then he says this, and I love this. He says, the awe-inspiring grandeur of God's creation, impressing the reader with its ordered structure, is concluded by these two verses that internally and externally express the significance of the seventh day. When we read the Genesis account, we see that God had clearly structured each day in a very orderly way, didn't he? How did he close out every day? He said it was evening and it was morning, first day, evening and morning, second day, third day, fourth day, fifth day, sixth day, right? A very, very structured, orderly way. And each day was filled with the awe-inspiring grandeur of God's creative power, as Dressler puts it. But God concluded the creation account with a significantly different day, the seventh day, a day that he blessed. He made it holy, he set it above all other days. Thus, the seventh day is the capstone of creation. It is the greatest day of creation. You see, we as men and women like to think that we are the whole reason for creation, don't we? We're so self-centered that we think all of this is just for us, right? But that's not the case at all. The point of creation is for God to do what? To display his attributes, who he is, right? God did all of this so that he could show who he is. He could display his power and his wisdom, his righteousness and his justice, his faithfulness and his truthfulness, his mercy and his wrath. All of God's attributes, so many others, are all displayed in creation. And the high point of it all, the capstone of God displaying who he is in creation, is seen in his grace, illustrated by the seventh day rest that he has ordained and wrought through his Son. This, I believe, is why God added the seventh day to creation, a day unlike any other day, a day which doesn't end with the description, there was evening and morning the seventh day, that tells us this is going to be a day that doesn't end. It's an eschatological day that points us forward to the eternal rest that God will accomplish for his people through his Son, Jesus Christ. So Genesis 2, verses 2 and 3 does not establish a Sabbath day observance, but rather it establishes God's ultimate order and purpose in creation. It establishes God's ultimate order and purpose in creation. And we can all agree that God here is laying the foundation for the concept of a day of rest for his people, but there's no establishment of the Sabbath day in a cultic sense here. So, when did he establish the Sabbath day for man? Well, that brings us to our next point in the outline, the Sabbath in Israel. And we're going to see four main points we're going to draw from this. The Sabbath was for Israel. The Sabbath was a new concept to them. The Sabbath was established here in Exodus 16, and we're going to see some of the rules that were established. So that's where we're going, is Exodus 16. So go ahead and turn there with me, if you would please. So, the day of rest, Shabbat, or Sabbath day, it was first instituted for the Jewish people right here in Exodus 16, after the Exodus from Egypt, but before the giving of the law. And the first thing we see is that it's for the people of Israel. And we also see that as far as they're concerned, this is a completely new concept to them. This idea of Sabbath ordinance is new. And I'll walk you through this so that we can see that. Here the people are hungry, and so God promises he's going to provide them some bread to eat, something that later on they will call manna. But here it's called bread, and he's also going to tell them that he's going to give them some meat as well in the form of quail. So in verse 4 it says, "Then the Lord said to Moses, Behold, I will rain bread from heaven for you, and the people shall go out and gather a day's portion every day, that I may test them whether or not they will walk in my instruction. On the sixth day, when they prepare what they bring in, it will be twice as much as they gather daily." So the first rule of this new ordinance that God is giving them is that on the sixth day, they're to gather twice as much. Doesn't really tell them why, just tells them that that's what they're to do. And then of course, he gives them the promise of some meat as well. And down in verse 13, we read this. "So it came about at evening that the quail came up and covered the camp, and in the morning there was a layer of dew around the camp. And when the layer of dew evaporated, behold, on the surface of the wilderness there was a fine, flake-like thing, fine as the frost on the ground. When the sons of Israel saw it, they said to one another, 'What is this?' For they didn't know what it was. And Moses said, 'It is the bread which the Lord has given you to eat. This is what the Lord has commanded.'" And then he tells them again, gather of it every man as much as he should eat. You shall take an omer apiece," that's simply a unit of measure, "a certain amount for each person, according to the number of persons each of you has in his tent." So if you live alone, you take one omer. If you live with five people, you take five omers. Very simple. And it says the sons of Israel did so. Some gathered much because they had many people in their tent, and some gathered little because they had fewer people in the tent. So far, so good. Each collected enough for his family. And so they all had enough to eat, it says. It says, it said, he who had gathered much had no excess, and he who had gathered little had no lack. Every man gathered as much as he should eat. And then verse 19, Moses adds this. He says, let no man leave any of it until morning. So they're not to keep it overnight. They're not to store up extra. And it says, but they did not listen to Moses, and some left part of it to the morning, and it bred worms and became foul, and Moses was angry with them. And then it says, they gathered it morning by morning, each man, as much as he should eat, but when the sun grew hot, it would melt. So apparently, if they tried to keep it overnight, it's going to go bad, right? And so what they didn't collect each day, when the sun came up, it evaporated away. And so they had to rely on God to provide it each day. But God had told them back in verse 5 to gather twice as much as they should gather on day 6. So that's what they did. In verse 22, it says, now on the sixth day, they gathered twice as much bread, 2 omers for each one. And then something very interesting happens. It says at the end of verse 22, when all the leaders of the congregation came and told Moses, what did they tell him? That they gathered twice as much, right? That's the idea. Then he said to them, this is what the Lord meant. And you see in this, there's an implication that they did what they were told to do and gathered twice the amount, but they didn't know why. And so there's a question. We did what you said, but why? Why did the Lord tell us to do this? And so Moses explains it. Tomorrow is a Sabbath observance. That's the Hebrew word Shabbaton, which means a holy, a solemn rest, rather. And it says, a holy Sabbath to the Lord. Bake what you will bake and boil what you will boil. And all that is left over, put aside to be kept until morning. So they put it aside and as Moses had ordered. So you see, they were confused about why they had to do this, why they had to collect a double portion on the sixth day. And they're thinking, why would they collect a double portion? All week long, if we collected extra, what happened to it? It rotted and went foul and rancid, and they had to throw it out. But God says to collect it on this day. So why would they do that if it's going to spoil overnight? Well, this tells us that they had every expectation to collect more on the seventh day. It gives us the idea that they knew nothing about a day of rest on the seventh day, is my point. They just assumed they'd collect more tomorrow. And for them, the seventh day wasn't any different than any other day. So Moses had to explain it to them that God wanted them to rest on this day. And so we read on that that's what they did in verse 24. They put it aside until the morning, just as Moses had ordered, and it did not become foul, nor was there any worm in it. Moses says, eat it today, for today is a Sabbath to the Lord. And there's our word Shabbat. Today you will not find it in the field. 6 days you shall gather it, but on the seventh day, the Sabbath, there will be none. And then he goes on and says, it came about on the seventh day that some of the people went out to gather, but they found none. Then the Lord said to Moses, how long will you refuse to keep my commandments and my instructions? See, the Lord has given you this Sabbath, for he gives you bread for 2 days on the sixth day. Remain every man in his place. Let no man go out of his place on the seventh day. So the people rested on the seventh day. And then verse 31 explains that they called it manna. So here we see God establishing the Sabbath day as an ordinance. And let me ask you, what was the rule? What were they not supposed to do, or what were they supposed to do on this day? What does it say that they're to do about this new ordinance? Anybody?
Let no man go out. Rest.
Yeah, both of them. At the end of verse 29, he says, remain every man in his place. Let no man go out of his place on the seventh day. Everyone's supposed to stay home. That's interesting that that's the first command given, and that they are to rest at home. And of course, not harvesting food is implied, but there's not going to be any manna on the ground anyway for them to harvest. So God would provide enough food on the sixth. He would miraculously keep it from spoiling so that they could stay home with their families and enjoy a day of rest. This was the original command of the Sabbath given to Israel. And what are some of the key lessons that we learn here? Well, first of all, it was given specifically to Israel, that is the Jewish people and not mankind in general. Second, that it seems to indicate that the people had no expectation or concept of resting on the seventh day. This is the first they've heard of it. Moses had to explain it to them. And we also see that in 2,500 years of biblical history, of mankind's history, from Adam to this moment, this is the first use of the word Shabbat to define this seventh day as the Sabbath. And we also see in verse 23, it's the first use of the Hebrew expression Shabbaton Shabbat Kadesh, which is a solemn rest, a holy Sabbath. That's a phrase that is tagged onto the Sabbath observance almost every single time that it's discussed in the entire Old Testament. They add that at the end of it. So now let's turn to Exodus chapter 20, and we pretty much got to wrap up here because we're almost out of time. Here we see the institution of the Ten Commandments, as they're called. There's actually 613 commandments in the law of God, but we point out the first 10. And this is the law that God gave Moses there on Mount Sinai. In verse 8, we see the fourth commandment. You shall not make for your... Oh, I'm sorry. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. This is the only commandment that begins with the word remember. Dr. Fruchtenbaum explains, this points Israel back to the nearest reference of the Sabbath. And what would that be? Exodus 16, right? Not Genesis 2. He explains that later in Deuteronomy 5, when God reiterates the law of Moses, the law of God, he doesn't say remember there, he says observe, observe. And that's because there's no previous reference in the context of the book of Deuteronomy. Deuteronomy 5 is in the context of keeping the already established law. So he says, observe the Sabbath. Exodus 20 is establishing the Sabbath as law. So it's referring back to the practice of the Sabbath, which was established back in Exodus 16. So you see there's stepping stones to this. Now let's note a couple distinctives about the Sabbath commandment. First of all, they're to keep it holy, which means they're to treat this day as God did. It's special. It's set above all other days. Secondly, how were they supposed to keep it holy? There in verses 9 and 10, it tells us, 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath of the Lord your God. In it you shall not do any work, you and your son or your daughter, your male or your female servant, or your cattle, or your sojourner who stays with you. So, in what way were they to keep this day holy? Cease from all work, right? Absolutely. But not just themselves. Now God extends it to their children, to their servants, to the guests in Israel, the sojourners, the strangers, as well as their animals. So God had rested on the seventh day, so everybody was to rest. And then verse 11. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea and all that is in them, and rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. So here the Sabbath is established as part of God's law, and it's modeled after how God treated the seventh day of creation. He blessed it and made it holy, and so should all of Israel. And lastly, let's notice what's not commanded as part of the Sabbath. And I found this to be very interesting. What is not commanded is corporate worship. Not yet, anyway. And in fact, not ever. In all of the Old Testament is corporate worship commanded as part of the Sabbath. Only that they were to cease to work and enjoy a day of rest. You could say that the rest itself was an act of worship, but there's no call to gather together and worship God. So we're gonna wrap this up because we only have 5 minutes left, and I want to leave a little time for discussion if you want. In Exodus 23, the next mention of the Sabbath commandment in verse 12 simply says, 6 days you are to do your work, but on the seventh day you shall cease from labor so that your ox and donkey may rest and the son of your female slave as well as your stranger may refresh themselves. So the same stipulations, no working for man or for animal with a focus on rest, and again, no mention of corporate worship. And the rest of the Old Testament add some more to the Sabbath. It doesn't just end right here in Exodus 23. There's a lot to say about it. There's a lot to say about the significance of the Sabbath, what it was a sign of, how they were to view it, not just how they were to observe it, you know, practically. And then we still have the Pharisees to look at in the first century, how they treated the Sabbath and what they had made it into. And so all of that's going to have to be next time. And I don't think it's going to be at the worship service, because I don't know if I think we should probably just do that together next month when we're doing Bible study. So I'm going to open us up for questions or debate or comments.